All right, so we are live. This is exciting. Hi, we're here. I'm here with David Takahashi, and this is episode two of our Climate Action Homes podcast. This is a fun thing for me. I've been doing Green Team Academy stuff for a long time, and now just looping back and doing real estate, but with a focus on my roots of all the home energy, building energy efficiency ideas. And the whole idea of climate action homes is that our houses are some of our biggest investments. So why don't we use those decisions to make a big positive impact for the planet when we're playing around with those kind of dollars rather than, should I recycle this thing or that? We're talking about what we do with hundreds of thousands of dollars. So how can we make a really positive impact with our choices? So that's why I wanted to bring you David Takahashi and talk about his efforts to decarbonize their home. And then we're also going to be talking about why he decided to run for city council for the city of Boulder in Colorado. So, hi, David.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for hopping on. So another thing is that I wrote this book called Climate Action Challenge, and one of the steps in there I tell people that I finally figured out was that when you want to really engage folks, that you want to do it on all levels. Because if you just sign petitions or if you just work on your own stuff, you feel frustrated. And so David's model is a great example. He works on the personal, the local, the state, and the global level with faith communities and city organizations and stakeholders groups and all kinds of stuff. And so I think this model is very fulfilling. And this is a lot of the environmental stuff is like, how can we do things in a way that's fulfilling. And so that's why I wanted to bring you David's story. So, David, do you want to start by telling us a little bit? I know that you say that in a way, you and your wife Emily are kind of climate refugees, and that's what started this journey. So do you want to just go ahead and tell us a little bit about that and how you ended up with this home that you were doing this work on?
Sure enough, in 2010, there was a wildfire outside of Boulder, a major wildfire for Colorado, and our home burned to the ground. And when your home burns to the ground, you end up arm wrestling with your insurance company. And for us, it took us 2 years to settle. And with all of these disasters that are happening, wildfires in the West, heat domes, flooding everywhere, but recently in Louisiana, New Jersey, and New York, all of these people are possibly displaced, and that means homeless. So the whole thing about the boats on the Mediterranean that Libya's turning away, these are all like drought, crop failure, things that are attributable to climate change are causing climate refugees, and it's real. 3 years later in Boulder, we had a year's rain in 3 days, and that caused like $500 million in damages. And here it is 8 years later, and some of the flood victims are still trying to put their lives together. So the whole climate refugee story, I think, is that no matter what station we have in life, we are a twist of fate away from homelessness. And there you have it.
Yeah. Right. And so really bringing that home and making those connections between any one of us could be without a home, a twist of fate, a few seconds away from something like that.
Absolutely. And so,
yeah. And I think that too, that we're in these, you know, different projections of where people are going to live, that climate is a huge factor. And it's going to really complicate an already very complicated housing.
And pretty housing democratic about who it affects.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So go ahead and tell us a little bit about the home that you ended up with and this journey to decarbonize your home.
Yes. So we ended up buying a replacement home. 2010 was the end of the bubble, and at that time the bank situation was really, really, really tight. So we also fell victim to the fact that because of the bubble, the building trades were very, very challenged. It's almost like it was their COVID. In terms of they had no business for 2 years. So we ended up buying a replacement home, which was pretty fortunate, actually, because there are a lot more existing homes than there are new built. So doing the efficiency work on a new construction is almost easy, where retrofitting an existing home, of which there are 180 million in the U.S., is more a interesting situation, because in order to get to our 1.5 target of rolling back global warming, we are going to need to retrofit our existing building stock. So we were lucky to get into the Boulder market. So after the housing bubble, with the banks being so obsessive about their loans, this house that we bought, 60-year-old modest ranch in a first ring suburb of Boulder, did not sell in 2011. We did our settlement in 2012, and the insurance company says, okay, you're on your own. Good luck. They paid out our settlement. You're on your own. Good luck. So we landed upon this house. We were like 3 days into the listing, and there were already five people ahead of us. By the time we got our offer in, there were five ahead of us. But we went down to the real estate office and explained that, actually, we were willing to pay cash, and we were ready to buy right now. And so the seller was able to take our offer. So it's a 60-year-old home built in 1954. The cookie cutter ranch, over the 60 years, the building had come out of true, and the windows no longer really worked, and you know, there were issues. And so it became a perfect laboratory for the carbon work. And it's really like carbon work is like a diet. You know, it's like you say, I'm going to go on my carbon diet, right? And the carbon diet, you know, you kind of have your carbon scale and you keep looking at your carbon scale and you go, oh, it got better. It got better. Let's do more of that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
I'm jumping ahead.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, of how did you, because I know I did that at one point, calculating my carbon footprint. And the first time I did it, it showed me how much my travel was impacting that. Yeah. But I was also looking at my home and some other things. So how did you go about that? I know that you're, by the end, you calculated that you had reduced it by 87%, but how did you figure out how much it was using to start with? What did you end up using to get your kind of starting point there to calculate that?
Okay, so there are two things that you can use. One is online, you can easily in 15 minutes calculate your household carbon footprint, which takes into account your travel, what kind of cars you have, what kind of diet you have, what kind of heat, what kind of lighting, you know, it just kind of goes through your inventory and then spits out a number, which in my case, I settled in on something called the metric ton equivalent, which is kind of a, it's a ton of carbon dioxide, which if you compare it to a modest two-story, three-bedroom house, 2,000 square feet, that's about what a metric ton of CO2 looks like. And North Americans, especially American North Americans, average around 17 of these a year. So as you start whittling away at your carbon diet, you know, and it's counting things like, you know, are you taking food out of your backyard versus buying food from Argentina, you start to see your metric tons go down. So 17 is where Americans are, and it's kind of the average for developed countries. Undeveloped countries, I think it's down around 3, and the idea of the earth could, if we created as much as the earth could consume, we would have no warming. And that number is around 6 of those metric tons. So we have to basically go from 17 to 6. And you just start whittling away. And as Joan has mentioned, your air travel has a huge impact on your household.
Okay, so that's a great, I appreciate you running through that. So that was really helpful. And that's...
There's another one.
Okay.
And the other is called a home efficiency rating score. And this takes an analyst, someone comes to your home and does an inventory of all of the kind of properties of your home, what kind of windows you have, how thick your insulation in your walls are, what your insulation in your ceiling is, what your home air leakage numbers are. And so this person comes in and creates a report, and the report goes like this. One, a score of one is the score that a newly constructed home built to code would be. Okay. Zero is net zero.
Hmm.
And our home started out at 190, meaning we were twice as inefficient as a new home built to code. Wow. And so as we did the work, we'd see our HERS score decrease, and we'll go over that as we get into the work.
Okay. So you're saying 100 would be average?
One.
Say again.
Oh, one. A score of one HERS is a newly constructed home built to code.
Gotcha.
That's your comparison.
Mm-hmm. So in a previous life, I worked on the first Colorado home energy rating system.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That was quite a while ago. It was like about 30 years ago.
You take everything into consideration, right?
Right. Exactly. You're kind of like building out. You're creating a model layer by layer. So it's pretty interesting stuff. But okay, great. Yeah. So you have those. So the one is a more general kind of number, and then the
anyone can do
is very specific.
Doesn't cost any money,
right?
But the other is you're a little bit OCD, obsessive carbon disorder, and you really want to get down on it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So let's jump in and give us kind of the quick overview, and then I want to make sure that we also talk about, you know, after this experience, why you decide to run for city council. Sure. So give us kind of a quick overview of some of the things.
Yeah, the overview is kind of interesting. You really have to start with weatherization, which is where you really want to start. Is you want to get an audit done with a blower door test, and this is something that you can usually talk to your utility, whoever provides your electricity and gas, to get them to help you afford a, a home energy audit. So this is your starting point. The auditors are very educated about figuring out what things you can do to weatherize your home, which basically means two things. Asking for less energy, and two, holding on to the energy you ask for. So weatherization takes care of leaky windows and light switches that are letting in outside air, or outlets that are letting in outside air, or you're actually still using incandescent bulbs and those could be switched out for LED, or your appliances, your refrigerator, your washer dryer, your dishwasher, your water heater, your furnace or hot water heating system are very, very old and could be on their last legs and would be candidates for upgrades to an Energy Star kind of situation. So your auditor's going to give you the roadmap for your home, which is really important. So the first part, again, is weatherization. And that is the easy, easy things like your ceiling insulation or sealing just simple door leaks, just the kind of door seals. And there's a whole slew of improvements that are very easy to make, the lowest hanging fruit.
Yeah, and I think this is an important thing for people to understand, is that most people just like feel like, I don't even know where to start or what to do. And the good news is you don't have to.
That's right.
That's why you get an energy auditor that is going to tell you, you know, here's things you can do that are going to be like low cost or no cost, and then on up to
and you know, also give you an idea of when things are going to be failing, because the last thing you want to do is wait till your water heater fails in order to make a better replacement, because when it fails, it's going to be at Christmas or Thanksgiving and you're not going to have time to do anything but put in the
same
gas guzzling.
Yeah.
That everyone. So they give you a roadmap, which is really, really important.
Yeah. So what are some of the
there's more. So then, now that you're using less and you're holding on to it as long as possible, the next thing that you can think about, is electrification, which is making sure that there's nothing in your home that is burning fossil fuel. So at a certain point, you will be able to say, Mr. Utility or Mrs. Utility, would you please come out and remove the natural gas line on my property, because I don't need it anymore. I don't want it. And I don't want to pay you a linkage fee that for something I'm not using. So that's really good. But the third thing that it allows you to do is now you can start to think about creating energy on your roof and using that instead of pulling it off the grid. So those are kind of the three steps you want to be thinking about.
Yeah, that's a good way to frame it, as far as the weatherization and the electrification and then creating your own. So then you guys went with some rooftop solar. And how has that been for you?
Well, we went with solar. We also went with storage. So for us, intention was not to save money. Our intention was to get off of fossil fuel. And in order to get off of fossil fuel, you have to think about your day. And your day kind of is the sun comes up, you create energy, but you're probably at work. And at night you come home, the sun goes down. How do you use the energy when it's now gone? So our intention was to get off of fossil fuel. So we needed to find a way to create energy during the day, but then use it at night. And the way you do this is by storing the energy you use during the day, you create during the day, in a battery. So for us, our carbon daily cycle is, you wake up in the morning and you say, is it sunny? And if it's sunny, you go, well, that's a very good thing. Then you say, the solar wakes up and says, oh, the sun is shining. Is anyone asking for any electricity in the house, like your electric kettle or your electric heat or your electric toaster or whatever? And if that is happening, then provide energy to that demand. If there's more energy than demand, ask the system, batteries, do you need to be topped off because you've been running all night? And the batteries say, I could use some power. So that demand gets taken care of by about 10 o'clock in the morning on a sunny day. The batteries are full. We're not asking for any power. We have a surplus. We put it out to the grid. So that happens all afternoon. And then, you know, depending on what time of year it is, the sun goes down and the lights go on and the electric range is being used. And maybe you're, you know, whatever you're doing comes off the battery. So from about sundown to sunup, we're taking energy from solar sunlight that has been captured on our roof and put into the battery. And there's this weird case where five days go by. It has been snowing for 5 days. There's no power being created. Our batteries deplete to zero. At that point, we kind of do the opposite, which is we say, okay, now we're back to where we started, and we'll be just like we always used to be, which is we get everything from the grid. This has never happened, but it could. So that's the
wow. That's carbon so storage. How many years have you experienced that where you've not needed from the grid?
Okay, so it's been 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So you know what I was thinking, David? There's a lot more details of everything that you did, and that let's share that link to that other presentation where you have the
sure
the slides, and if you want to know all the details of what was done, sure, you can watch that other one, which is pretty fascinating going through that. So what I want to ask you now was you went through this. I know you've been active in the community. On the community level a lot, but now you're kind of taking up a step and running for Boulder City Council. So how did that decision come about, and what's kind of your idea with that?
Okay, so the we are in a climate emergency, and we have 10 years to actually get our act together, and our local Boulder, even Boulder, Colorado, is a little bit asleep about the urgency of action. So it became clear that people needed to be stepping up to inform local decisions that there is a climate component to just about everything. And that I have been working with the city for 6 years, you know, getting this project going. Even with the fire, I was working with city and county, you know, in terms of how we might do a rebuild. So I've pre-built a lot of the relationships that a council person actually needs. The thing about local government to me is that there are four legs to government. There's your governing council, city council. There are your boards and commissions, which are focused on areas like housing or environment or the litany of boards and commissions. You have city staff, and finally you have the public. And it is my, here in Boulder, we have such an incredible, incredibly intelligent, innovative, caring, and engaged public that those three other organs seem to ignore. So it felt to me like it was a good time to bring the public back into local government. And so I stepped up, and I'm running. I don't know what I'm doing, but it's never stopped me before.
Right. Well, just like renovating your house or anything. Yeah. You know? I love that. And I think that city government, you know, when I was in Longmont and I started that Sustainable Revolution Longmont, and early on, people in Longmont were saying, nobody in Longmont cares about sustainability. And it's like, that can't be true. Yeah, yeah. And once we had enough people, we started our nonprofit, and we had enough people, and people kept going to city council and saying the same thing. We had this cohesive message. We did this big Earth Day festival. We had 1,000 people show up, and we changed the course of the city. And it was like, who knew? And that thing that as a small group of people need to go have a cohesive message, and the city council can then tell staff, this is what we want you to work on. And they were actually kind of prevented from working on some of the stuff based on what a previous city council had told them. So right. It's actually pretty simple once you understand how it works. So I think this thing of bringing the public back, understanding what it's like to be the public, and then sit, where you're now like, oh, I exactly get what you're going through, and prioritizing. That's why I'm doing this Climate Action Homes, is like, mm-hmm. every house you buy or sell or invest in, this is a huge opportunity. But if we, like you said, if the water heater just goes out and you just replace it with the same thing, we're never going to get there. But if we see these opportunities and think of them as a really critical time of like, oh, I can make a big change right now, then that's the way it could go.
Another interesting thing about campaigning is that we made the decision that we were going to run a different kind of campaign. We were going to run a zero waste, plastic free, walk the talk political campaign. We felt surely this has been done, but it turns out anywhere. We phoned up Berkeley, California, and said, Berkeley, surely people have done zero waste political campaigns there. And they go, actually, no, they haven't. Uh-huh. So we're having to, how do you do a campaign where you don't have plastic yard signs? Mm. How do you do a campaign where you're not making stupid buttons that are going to end up in landfill? How do you do a campaign where you're not just creating more paper to be like thrown into the recycle without even the whole thing is so broken. Yeah. That so we're having to how do you print on plantable paper?
Right.
So how do you get people to know who you are without putting up plastic yard signs and doing these incredibly stupid mailings or bothering them on, you know, using text, whatever. So, you know, we have these things called QR codes.
Yeah.
You know about QR codes?
Yes.
Right?
I mean, they were a big thing back in the day and now they're back.
Yeah. So it's like we're making t-shirts with the QR code. So, you know, you just kind of take your phone, you know, and just say, and it takes to the website.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we're just having to rethink the whole campaign in terms of walking the talk. Mm. And so that's been really good. The other thing I'd like to say is we're in this really bizarre time, Joan, where things that used to work no longer do, but the thing that is going to replace them isn't really here yet.
Mm, yeah.
But in the meantime, we actually have to do something. So, you know, this whole idea of how we create, how we use energy, for instance, is in this kind of liminal,
right?
You know, is it going to be big central, or is it going to be decentralized people running off their roofs, you know, and microgrids? And, you know, everything's kind of in flux right now, which is kind of wonderful.
Yeah. Well, I a couple things. One is that I do think that operating at this level where the creativity is the part that makes this work fulfilling, compared to if you sign up for a big national organization and they say, hey, sign this petition, send us money. Like, there's nothing creative in that. And that's, I think that's part of why it's not very fulfilling. No,
it's working so well.
Yeah, right. It has failed. The environmental movement has failed. So, yeah. So this thing of creating different things and, I mean, it's hard for me, having graduated from college in 1978, to go into solar energy, you know, to see these decades where things could have been done. But the flip side is understanding now that it's us, that we don't really have to wait on other people, that we're the ones that are actually going to make these things happen.
We are the ones we have been waiting for.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was really happy to hear I got that email from you that said, hey, we did this on our house and why I think we could just do it on our whole community.
Yeah.
So I appreciate what you've been doing and that you came on and talked about this today. And yeah, and good luck with the campaign. We definitely need more people that prioritize this in every decision. That's what I've been thinking, David.
I'm going to be encouraging people to do this more.
Yeah. And
absolutely. Around the country.
I think you know, it's like right now, if you go to do anything, somebody at some point will say, how much does it cost?
Yeah.
And they're talking about money. But, you know, to get to that point of, okay, yeah, we could do this trip, but how much does it cost? And we're talking about carbon. So bringing that kind of mindset into a whole city.
But there's also the cost of not doing it.
Yes, right. The cost of waiting. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, I was working on a project that was like a big chiller replacement. And I wrote on the board, they were like, well, we're just going to think about it. I'm like, okay, do you mind if I write something on the board real quick? And it was the cost of waiting was $1,000 per day. It's like, okay, talk to you guys later. But, you know, it's like, it is a creative challenge of how to communicate it. But it's, I think, leading with your intention that this is important and that we are the ones that can do it is the way to
do it. And at the end of the day, it's did I decrease my fossil fuel consumption today?
Yeah, you're right. It is like a diet.
If you keep saying that, we will reach the golden place of we broke our addiction to fossil fuel. Hooray!
Right. It's possible. All right. Well, thank you so much, David. Really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.
All right. Bye, everybody. And remember, it's Joan Gregerson here with Climate Action Home. If you want to do something cool with your home,
you can reach me through Joan.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. We'll put your QR code, your link in the comments there too.
Great.
Sounds good. Cool. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Okay. Bye.